What happens in Genesis chapter 12? Abraham at first receives the promise, but ultimately he shows and has some tragedy along the way. He said that there was a famine in the land of Egypt. What did we say famine was? Let's see. Annalisa. I already promised her she'd get the first question, so. No, just what do we say that it was a picture of in the previous lessons? I always ask that backwards. You get the second question then as well. All right. Famine excuse me while I take this off. Probably a little hard to see that thing anyways to look at it. That's what my wife said. I don't know. But famine is a picture or a type of spiritual testing. We see that in the book of Ruth. We see it here with Abraham. And God has already given Abraham some promises. But in his desperation, he says, I don't know if this is going to work out or not. And so he heads down to Egypt. And it doesn't get any better from there. Let me ask it this way. What is... Anna. Oh, Annalisa. Sorry. Anna, what was it? Faith. Faith is helping or keeping our eyes on God. Faith is simply believing God. Isn't that what it says later in the Bible about Abraham? He believed God and it was accounted unto him for what? Righteousness. So when we believe, what's a couple synonyms for believe? Trust. When we trust God, what's another synonym? That's good. That's very good. Fully rely upon. What's one word that says that? What is it? Depend. Whether we're fully relying upon, whether we're believing, whether we're trusting, all those have the same idea of having confidence or trusting what God has said. That's what Abraham is saying. Or that's what God says about Abraham. But that's what we see Abraham not doing here. Tonight I want to take just a second. Every week, I don't know why I haven't figured this thing out with Logos yet. This is the only message I've ever prepared in Logos. It's my last and my first, not necessarily in that order. All right. We talked about Abraham's lie last time, and he was not keeping his eye on God. And I want to talk about the fulfillment of his worst fear. Let's look at verse 12 of chapter 12. Who do we got out here? Adam, can you raise your voice just as loud as you can and just stand up and kind of turn around and read Genesis 12, 12 through 16. Genesis chapter 12, verses 12 through 16. All right, so we talked about the lie last week. Abram comes to Sarai and he says, now listen, you are a beautiful woman, and when we go down there, somebody's going to want you, and I hear that they are good at making widows down there, so I want you to tell this lie, right? Didn't he say this is a very despicable thing that he does to his wife? So when they get down there, it's as almost as if you can hear as they're walking by the different construction sites, the cat calls and the whistling, and Abraham's thinking, oh, I knew this was going to happen. I knew this was going to happen. The whole time he's thinking, this is bad. And what was he thinking initially? The whole time he's thinking, they're going to kill me. They're going to kill me. And he had all these things about self-preservation. This is what I have to do in order to live. These are the things that are going to keep me alive. And so I will lie. I will ask other people to lie. I will defraud my God. I will defraud my wife. Now, does anybody have any idea? And I know there might be a broad range of ideas, but does anybody have an idea of how old Sarai is at this point in her life? I don't think she's quite that old. Yeah, I have 65 on mine, so I think she's about 65. So I know what some of you ladies are going to do tonight. You're going to go look up the Mesopotamian diet, and you're going to go look up the Mesopotamian mud that Sarah was obviously putting on every night. And I mean, at 65, Abraham is worried about, and it's coming true. Everything that he feared is coming true. You know, the sad thing about Abram, throughout all of this, you have to come to one conclusion. He was concerned about one thing, himself. You could almost ask it this way. He was thinking, what must I do to save me? He was not concerned as much about his wife. He was not concerned about everything else. So what happens? Pharaoh followed the custom of the day. He sees Sarai. He says, she's pretty. I want her in my harem. So he puts her into the harem house. In that day, if the father had died, it would not be unusual for the brother to be the one that is responsible or the legal guardian of an unmarried sister. And so Abraham was the supposed brother. He was going to be paid the price for the bride. Now get this. I'm not saying Abraham's motive was to prostitute his wife, but if he doesn't step up and say something, that would be the equivalent, because he's about to get paid for his wife. And if he doesn't step up and say, listen, no, this is my wife. She's my half-sister, but she's my wife. He's no better than someone that would prostitute a loved one in order for financial gain. That's pretty low for a believer to sink to. But can you see when focus is on self, when you begin to be more concerned about yourself than anyone else, what the depths that we can sink to, even as believers? Now, other than, there's just about no sin that a believer cannot commit. So it'd be very easy to say, well, that Abraham, he's a skunk. He's a low down. And at this point, it's probably the lowest point other than the other time he goes to Egypt and does the same thing. But those are low spots in his life. Unless we get too conceited, I think we can look at our own lives and say, boy, I remember this time in my life when I didn't have my focus on God, when I wasn't walking with God, that. But aren't you glad you don't have to stay there? Aren't you glad that you don't have to live in a place where you just have constant regret? What are some of the consequences of Abram's sin at this point? Anybody have any ideas? Yes, sir. Absolutely. And we'll see that later on. I mean, the Pharaoh, he just calls him out. A lost man just completely, just for lack of a better vernacular, just trashes him. Rightly so. What else happened? Now, listen, in the New Testament, husbands are told to what their lives? Wives. Love. We love our lives too, but I meant love your wives. Primarily, what are women commanded to do? Reverence or respect their husbands. Is that right? And so when we see this relationship dynamic, I'll tell you, it would not be hard for me to imagine Sarai losing complete respect for her husband at this point. Because he never does step up. He never does step in and say, that's my wife. Don't take her there. Now, God steps in. We'll talk about that in just a little bit. But no man wants to lose his testimony to a lost and dying world that I know of, that loves the Lord. No man would ever surrender his respect for his wife that I know of and not have regret over it. All right, so he is surrendering some very serious spiritual capital, if I could put it that way, for self-preservation. What are some other things? Let's go down to verse 17 for just a moment. Verse 16. It says, and he entreated that he was the Pharaoh, entreated Abram, well, for her sake, that's her, Sarah, And he had sheep and oxen, and he asses, and men servants and maid servants, and she asses and camels. Those are things that Pharaoh gave to him. Now, we're not going to get there because we're not studying through the book of Genesis. But in the next chapter, does anybody know what happens in chapter 14? There's a family division. It causes some family friction. Why? Because Abram has so much cattle and so much livestock that him and Lot can no longer graze together. Now, I believe it's ultimately is God's divine providence because he knew Lot's heart. But I'll tell you, what Abram's getting now, he's not getting rich, he's getting a lot of troubles. Those men servants and maid servants, I think that's one of the most critical mistakes or major problems that Abraham's going to have through the rest of the book of Genesis. And really, we're still looking at that conflict today. Where is Hagar from? She's from Egypt. Now, it could be, I don't have a Bible verse, it says in verse 16 that he got her from Egypt, but whether it was this time or the next time, somewhere along the way, he had acquired Hagar as a maidservant for Sarai. Do you see, this idea of self-preservation was leading to one catastrophe after another, things that he was not going to bring into harvest for years later. And yet, he just wanted to make sure he was safe in his own skin. You know, what does that look like in our life today? If we look at self-preservation, how do we try to preserve ourselves? Anybody think of any ideas? I'm not saying you did it. I'm just saying, what are some ways? Maybe we lie, just like he did, to the boss about something that happened, to a spouse about something that we don't want them to know about. I heard of a fellow that was spending, or actually, in this instance, it was a wife that was spending incredible amounts of money that is somehow the husband didn't know about. And she would have done anything to keep that from finding out, but you can only do that for so long before it comes to pass. But there's that idea of self-preservation. Anybody else have any other ideas? Charlie? In what instance? Okay, Charlie says not being transparent in your demeanor. Almost putting on a facade, is that what you're saying? Everywhere you go, you have your Christian smile on, but maybe you're wallowing in sin. I don't know, but you're right. So we care about what other people think of us, right? Thankfully, we're not in a place or a country yet where we have to lie to preserve our life, right? But that's where Abraham thought he was. And so he was reaping and would reap a terrible harvest from that. Just have a few minutes left before we're going to break up and pray. But let me ask you this. Why do you think God allowed this to happen? What would be a purpose that God would allow Abram's worst fear to come to pass? Was he punishing Abram? I don't think so. How so? Bill said to draw Abram closer to God. Right, right. God's our only hope, no matter what situation we're in. You're exactly right. So God was working in him. Christian? Let me ask you this. What is Abram's main sin, the root sin in this situation? Unbelief. You could have let us guess for a little bit. He's exactly right. Lying, he lied. He prostituted his wife. Those were fruit. Genesis chapter 12, what did God tell Abram? What did he tell him? You're going to be fruitful. You're going to multiply. Had he had any children up to this point? No. No, he didn't have any children up to this point. God had made a promise. Was God going to keep that promise? Yes, he would. So when Abram looks around and he says, they're going to kill me, what is he calling God? He's saying, God didn't tell the truth to me. In essence, he's calling God a liar. Okay? When we really don't believe God, are we going to be living in victory or defeat? I'll tell you, this is a great picture of the New Testament Christian that is trusting the arm of the flesh to try to get him through a trial or a difficulty. I want you to think about this. God lets Abram get to the very worst fulfillment of his greatest fear before he steps in. But in doing that, in stepping in verse 17, look at verse 17 just for a moment so you can contextualize what I'm saying. It says, and the Lord plagued Pharaoh and his house with great plagues because of Sarai, Abram's wife. God steps in. Despite Abram's failure, despite his lack of faith, his unbelief, and ultimately his failure is because he is faithless. But I think that ought to help you and me. Because when we go to the doctor and we are fearing the worst possible report that could be given to us, we can know, just like in Abram's life, God is still working in our lives. When we're called to the boss and it's maybe people are being laid off or we're fear that we're going to be fired and it's the worst possible outcome that you could be afraid of, you can still know that God is still there with you working. All you have to do is simply believe, to trust, to depend. Do you see the correlation? What do you have to believe? What do you have to trust? What do you have to depend upon? Your work, your effort, your trying harder. The harder Abram tried, the deeper he dug himself a hole. But I think for every obstacle and every trial we'll ever face, the answer is in God's word, whether in the form of a promise or an example or a command. God just expects us to believe him. Now, I'm not saying that he accounts that to us for righteousness for our salvation. But really, in our dispensation, in the day and time in which we live, isn't that true? When we put our faith and trust in Jesus Christ, we're just taking God at his word. He said, this is what Jesus has done for you. And when you put your faith and trust in Jesus Christ and him alone, then it's accounted to you for righteousness? Absolutely. And so when we walk by faith, if we are going to simply just trust God. Now, let me ask you this. What if you're sitting in the doctor's office and you know what God has said and you're chewing your fingernails to the bone and you're nervous and you're anxious and you're thinking about all the worst possible. Is that victory? Is that what victory looks like in a Christian's life? No, we said that fear and faith are diametrically opposed. Right? So victory is simply knowing what God has said. See, you kind of have to know what God has said, right? And then you believe it. You trust it. It's not a complicated idea. And it's easy to preach in a sense, but it can be very challenging to live. And so I think that every camel and donkey and maidservant that he got was heaping coals of conviction upon his head. I don't think he was rejoicing. Sarah's gone now, and he's not done anything still. And I wonder what a relief it was when the Pharaoh came to him. And he said, what have you been doing? Look just very quickly, if you will, at verses 18 and 19. Pharaoh called Abram and said, what is this that thou hast done unto me? Why didst thou not tell me that she was thy wife? Why saidest thou, she is my sister, so I might have taken her to me to wife? Now therefore, behold thy wife, take her, and go thy way. And Pharaoh commanded his men concerning him, and they sent him away, and his wife, and all that he had. Can I tell you right there? That's the mercy of God. That's the grace of God. Pharaoh, for lying to him, could have commanded that Abram and Sarai both were put to death, or just killed Abram and then taken Sarai as his wife. But God intervened. And God kept true to his word that Abram was going to be the father of many nations. I think it was not Adoniram Judson, but who went to China? William Carey, where did he go? India, Burma, right? He started at Burma. I think it was William Carey that said that his future were just as bright as the promises of God. I think we as New Testament believers can believe that. Now, I think that we ought to be able to look at God and what he said and simply trust him. We can try. We can try to preserve ourselves or work our way out of the trouble or do whatever it is. But if our confidence, our dependence isn't in God, the arm of the flesh will fail every single time. We're going to be looking a little bit more at this on Sunday with Joshua. But I just want to encourage you that the life of Abram, as we look forward to revival in just a couple of weeks, where is it that you're trusting yourself? So often we are able to categorize different areas of our life. Well, I'm trusting the Lord with my finances and I'm trusting him in this area, but he just seemed like he hasn't come through with my health. Now, I'm not saying name it and claim it as far as, well, God has to give me great health. But it could be that he wants you to grow in some area of trust and dependence through that health issue. Or it might be finances, and they're stretched tight, and he's saying, listen, I'm not just going to rain money down on you, but I'm going to help you to learn how to trust me on a deeper level. And so faith and trust and dependence upon God, it doesn't mean that the Christian's not going to go through trials and not going to go through valleys, but there's a promise that he's going to go through those valleys with us then. And that is the hope that we have. So we look at Abram, who failed the test, who did not keep his eyes on God, who God allowed the fulfillment of his worst fear, and for all eternity, his failure is recorded. Now, aren't you glad that your failures aren't recorded for everyone to read? But I hope tonight you walk out of here with hope, knowing that you can walk in victory if you just put your confidence or your dependence, your trust in God and what he has said and what he has promised. Why don't we take some time to pray together? I can get some fellas to go through and collect the prayer cards. We will pray with each other in just a moment. I thought I had one. Okay. All right. If you will be praying about our revival services starting on Easter, April 4th, and I'm looking forward to that. It'll be our first major services or revival services here in this building. But we have a friend up in West Virginia.